Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Pregnancy of Ditti in the Evening, text number 36. Is that right? Sana prasida tambhamo.
Sana prasida tambhamo.
Bhagavan urvanu graha.
Bhagavan urvanu graha.
Vyadhasya pyanu kampyanam. Let him be pleased with us, since he is my brother-in-law, the husband of my sister Sati. He is also the worshipable lord of all women. He is the personality of all opulences and can show mercy towards women who are excused even by the uncivilized hunters. Purport, Lord Shiva is the husband of Sati, one of the sisters of Ditti. Ditti invoked the pleasure of her sister Sati so that Sati would request her husband to excuse her. Besides that, Lord Shiva is the worshipable lord of all women. He is naturally very kind towards women on whom even the uncivilized hunters also show their mercy. Since Lord Shiva is himself associated with women, he knows very well their defective nature, and he might not take very seriously Ditti's unavoidable offence, which occurred due to her faulty nature. Every virgin girl is supposed to be a devotee of Lord Shiva. Ditti remembered her childhood worship of Lord Shiva and begged his mercy. Text 37, Maitreya Vacha Sva Sargasya Sisham Lokyam Asashanam Prave Patim Nibritta Sanyani Yamo Bhadbalyam Aha Prajapatihi. Maitreya said, the great sage Kasyapa thus addressed his wife, who was trembling because of fear that her husband was offended. She understood that he had been dissuaded from his daily duties of offering evening prayers, yet she desired the welfare of her children in the world. Text 38. Kasyapa uvacha aprayatyat atmanaste doshan mohur tikaduta Mani desha ticharena devanam chatihelanat. The learned Kasyapa said, because of your minds being polluted, because of defilement of the particular time, because of your negligence of my directions, and because of your being apathetic to the demigods, everything was inauspicious. Purport, the conditions for having good progeny in society are that the husband should be disciplined in religious and regulated principles and excuse me, and the wife should be faithful to the husband. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 11, it is said that sexual intercourse according to religious principles is a representation of Krishna consciousness. Before engaging in sexual intercourse, both the husband and the wife must consider their mental condition, the particular time, the husband's direction, and obedience to the demigods. According to Vedic society, there is a suitable, auspicious time for sex life, which is called the time for Garbhadhana. Ditti neglected all the principles of scriptural injunction and therefore, although she was very anxious for auspicious children, she was informed that her children would not be worthy to be the sons of a Brahmana. There is a clear indication herein that a Brahmana's son is not always a Brahmana. Personalities like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu were actually born of Brahmanas, but they were not accepted as Brahmanas because their fathers did not follow the regulated principles for their birth. Such children are called demons or Rakshasas. There were only one or two Rakshasas in the previous ages due to negligence of the disciplinary methods. But during the age of Kali, there is no discipline in sex life. How then can one expect good children? Certainly, unwanted children cannot be a source of happiness in society, but through the Krishna consciousness movement, they can be raised to the human standard by chanting the holy name of God. That is the unique contribution of Lord Chaitanya to human society. Timirandasya Gananjana Sulakaya Chakchuram Militam Tena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahayam Tadati Swapadam Tikam Mukam Kaloti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Gurim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatavinam. Right, so there are activities that elevate the consciousness, and there are activities that can degrade one's consciousness. The Vedic culture is values various principles for the elevation of consciousness, especially socham. Purity of consciousness, external and internal cleanliness, where the external surroundings of one's work, one's living place, the place of one's activities, everything is kept very clean. You know, one of the first thing that we do when we wake up in the morning, you know, clean our teeth, clean the body. Then offer obeisances. Worship the Guru, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these activities, external and internal, combined together, help elevate the consciousness, so that rather than we're thinking that we're a product of the material energy, the living entity is able to identify with our spiritual identity. Without the spirit soul in the body, basically all we've got is matter, dead matter. And so the proper state of being is to identify with the Atma, the Jiva Atma, the real self, not the external body, the mind and the senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, the working senses. So, you know, this is really the goal of spiritual culture or any culture, if it's to be considered culture, is to aspire to move towards a spiritual understanding of identity, not as an understanding of identity based on material identification. So, it's mentioned here, before engaging in sexual intercourse. Well, no, before that. How Prabhupada's explaining, and this is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita as well, how to create good progeny within society, given that the consciousness is so important and we want individuals within society to be of good qualities. And good qualities meaning that they're attracted to principles of cleanliness, they're attracted to principles of mercy, the principle of sense control, austerity, principles of truthfulness. The four regulated principles are described in the Bhagavatam as the first four principles of human life. So the idea is to create in society a culture of spiritual achievement. And so in that kind of a culture, these principles are valued. They're understood to be essential for good human beings, and essential for elevating the consciousness of the general masses above that of purely material activities, or as Prabhupada explains, animal behavior. You know, if we look at society, then we can see basically people are no better than animals. Eating, ahara, nidra, sleeping, maitunam, sex, and bhayam, fearing. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Now, you know, there's a certain element of those activities that have to be performed, even if one is interested in spiritual culture. But they're not the be-all and end-all of existence. And so therefore, you know, the transcendentalists keep those activities to a minimum. And they allow their routine activities to be guided by the principles of goodness, basically, so that one is able to remain somewhat detached from these base material activities and is able to engage in activities that elevate the consciousness. As Krishna mentions, you know, even sex life, according to religious principles, Krishna says, that I am. So, you know, eating, it can be sanctified. We offer our food to Krishna. And so eating is not just, you know, filling the belly, satisfying the tongue, But it also is a process of purification. Right? What is that? What's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? About the santas, the santa. Anybody know that verse? What's the first line? What's the first word? Yagya shishta shana santo muchante sarvakilbishai. What's the next line start with? Munjate te tugam pa bam ye pachancham atmakaranat. So, you know, the devotees, yagya shishta, the devotees are accustomed to taking the remnants of yagya. And what's the yagya? What's the yagya we perform when we prepare food? What's the yagya? Huh? Hare Krishna. Yeah. A bit more than that. A little bit more than that. We offer the food to Krishna. We chant Hare Krishna. You know, natural tendency is just to get something and then eat it straight away. But the sacrifice is to understand where it comes from. Isavasyam idam Isavasyam idam sarvam. Everything comes from the Supreme Controller. So therefore we offer the food to him first. This is our yagya. Not very difficult. Huh? But if you offer the food to Krishna, then it becomes sanctified. The remnants of yagya. If you take the remnants of yagya, what happens? Yagya shishta shana santo. What happens? You take the remnants of sacrifice, what happens to you? Paya? What happens? What does it mean to be shanta? Huh? Saintly, yeah, peaceful. You become peaceful. When you eat a meal of prasadam, how do you feel? Shanta. Peaceful. That's if you eat too much. Huh? You go to sleep, even. Yagya shishta sana shanto muchante sarvakilbishai. All of the sinful reactions get burnt off from taking prasadam. Amazing. So, you know, ordinarily ahara is just, you know, feeling satisfying the belly and the tongue. Of course, you shouldn't eat too much, as Jagannath Rao mentioned yesterday. Too much, overeating can be detrimental to spiritual life. But the regulated practice of taking prasadam, enough to satisfy our needs, that's actually purifying. So, even eating, sleeping, not sleeping too much, sleeping enough to rest the body, it can be service. Even here, sex life, according to religious principles, Krishna says, I am. So therefore that's purifying. Right? It's a sacrifice. And in order to perform that duty properly, then there are recommended principles. Therefore, we have this story in the Bhagavatam, you know, to really illustrate this point. That, you know, sex life, which most people, or, you know, they don't really think about. these. What were, in any case, if there are any children, they want to kill them anyway. So that's, you know, they're not worried about what the quality of the children are. They just want, they want to avoid them altogether. But this is demonic, actually. The purpose of sex is for the procreation of children. It has a function. The genitals have a function. And should be used, you know, it should be used for that purpose only. Because in the Kali Yuga, in the age of Kali, sex is misunderstood, misappropriated. And so people think sex is for fun. Sex is for enjoyment, because it's automatically enjoyable. But that's not its purpose. And so therefore, you know, the Vedic system teaches us how to use these things in the proper context. And so, Prabhupada mentions here, before engaging in sexual intercourse, both the husband and wife must consider their mental condition. The time, the particular time, the husband's direction. And which is really, you know, the opposite of what's happened here. And obedience to the demigods. And then Prabhupada explains. According to Vedic society, there is a suitable, auspicious time for sex life, which is called the time for Garbhadhana. Unfortunately, Ditti neglected all of these principles and neglected the order of her husband, she wanted auspicious children, but she wasn't patient enough. And so, as Prabhupada says here, she was informed, your children are going to be demons. Even though they're born of a brahmana. Kashyapa Muni is a brahmana. But, you know, your parental, your parents' influence may not be sufficient for you to be as qualified as them. You know, because we see it, we were discussing the other day, sometimes the children of devotees become demons. And sometimes families who don't have any obvious devotional qualifications or practice, their children become devotees. So there are other influences. And Prabhupada makes a point here. Personalities like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu were actually born of brahmanas, but they became big demons. Right? Such children are called demons or rakshasas. There was only one or two rakshasas. There were only one or two rakshasas in the previous ages due to negligence of disciplinary methods. But during the age of Kali, there is no discipline. So what have we got? What have we got in Kali Yuga?
Demons.
Us. Huh? Huh? We got us. No wonder we've got problems.
course, as Prabhupada points out in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the process of devotional service can elevate anybody. The chanting of Hare Krishna, Kalo, what is it? Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, but one good quality is the chanting of Hare Krishna. So, we shouldn't be surprised to see disturbed people in Kali Yuga. We shouldn't be surprised. We came back from Perth the other day, and we were descending down the elevator, and this lady behind us she stepped onto the elevator and went down a few, you know, went down, and then she freaked out. She just couldn't work out what she was doing. I figured she must have been on drugs, because, you know, usually you can cope with an elevator. But she couldn't. She was screaming, and other people just laughing at her. Disturbed. People just disturbed. So, it's interesting here what Prabhupada says. You know, Kali Yuga, nobody follows the principles of having good children. Right? And so consequently, we shouldn't be surprised that there are a lot of disturbed people around. But Prabhupada says, through the Krishna consciousness movement, they can be raised to the human standard by chanting the holy name of God. That is the unique contribution of Lord Chaitanya to human society. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna. Isn't that amazing? A person can be elevated to the platform of humanity. Otherwise, whilst people look like humans, we can tell from their behaviour that actually they're animals. This is a hard thing to come to terms with. Most of the people that we have to deal with, including ourselves sometimes, are basically animals, and disturbed animals at that. How do you feel about that? What do you feel of being labelled an animal? Is that fair or not? It's fair. Yeah, if the cap fits, wear it. Right? We have to. Because we walk around in Kali Yuga, everybody thinks, oh, I'm very qualified. Huh? So not much humility, a lot of pride. So Prabhupada mentions, you know, in the Kali Yuga, the pauper is proud of his penny. Huh? He's got a penny and he thinks, oh, wow, I'm really, really fortunate now. So, you know, some little qualification that we have, you know, we can kick a soccer ball, or, you know, sing, or, you know, play a guitar, whatever. And just because we're good at these paltry activities, and that we become proud. Proud of our paltry endeavours, achievements. Which is why, you know, cultivating humility is important for the Trinadupi Sunichana Torolivasa Hishnana Amanadina Manadina Kirtaniya Sadahari. The devotees generally cultivate, or the culture of human society is not to think that I'm really highly qualified and highly elevated, even for the, or especially for the devotees.
But the culture of the Vedic culture is to cultivate knowledge. And one of the symptoms of knowledge is humility. Because one realizes that one is infinitesimally small, and that whatever facilities or good qualities we might have, if we're fortunate, are ultimately Krishna's mercy. And, you know, it's Krishna's mercy that we have the opportunity to chant Hare Krishna. It's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And that we can actually understand things as they are through the chanting of Hare Krishna, through the association of the devotees, through the chanting of Hare Krishna, hearing the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. Worshipping the deity, living in a sacred place. These are the principles. Following the four regulated principles. They're the beginning. The four regulated principles are the beginning of human life. There's another 20 or so qualities that are recommended in different sections of the Bhagavatam. So, ditti was overcome by the modes of ignorance and passion. And so as a consequence then, her children were less than ideal. So it is important for us to understand how the activities that we perform have significant consequences on our consciousness. And so we're recommended to follow these basically principles of goodness. And principles of goodness that support devotional activities. Our goal is to go back home, back to Godhead. Krishna says, you know, if you think of me, then you'll come to me. So the practice of devotional service is focused on being able to remember Krishna throughout our daily activities so that we can offer everything. What is it? Yat karosi, yat ashnasi, yat jahosi, dadasi, yat tapasya sakuntaya, tat kurusva. Madhapranam. So everything we do is meant to be an offering to Krishna. And manmana, we have to think of Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto, become my devotee. And so, you know, following the principles of Vedic culture, rising early in the morning, keeping oneself clean externally and internally, chanting Hare Krishna, carefully, with focus, with attention, is the means by which we purify our consciousness and how we hone that ability, sharpen that ability to remember Krishna and to offer whatever we do so that what we do is an offering and is pure. The primary purpose of our activities is to please Krishna. Because we think, oh, the primary purpose of our activity, my activities, is to please myself. Right? But we're taught sacrifice, jagya, means the primary purpose of our activities is to please Krishna. So therefore, you know, when we cook, in fact, you know, what, there's a huge percentage of our activities, in certainly in this temple, any temple really, is to cook. Right? And then what do we do with the cooking? Offer to Krishna. Yeah. How many offerings? Seven. Who said five? Five. Most of us work out that there's seven pretty quickly. Right? Have you ever eaten every offering in a day? Huh? Who's tried that? Huh? Dvija Pitambara does it regularly. Yeah. You usually will have killed your digestion by the time you get to the 7 o'clock. So you actually can't eat that much. Only Krishna can eat that many times a day. So it's a jagya. Life is a jagya. Huh? Staying alive is a jagya. But offering everything to Krishna, that's quite a sacrifice. But that's what Vedic culture is about. Vedic. I'd say here. Yeah, Vedic society. Everything is done as an offering. In consideration of what? Here? The mental condition. Mental condition. The particular time. In this case, the husband's direction and obedience to the demigods. Because obedience to the demigods for us means following the instruction of the spiritual master. Right? The spiritual master is a representative of all of the demigods. And the demigods are Krishna's representative, just as the guru is. And we worship the demigods in ISKCON, we worship the demigods by worshipping the guru, by following the instructions. The demigods are Krishna's representatives, and that's why we follow them, or we should follow them. But in our case, we don't get to meet a demigod very often, if at all. But we get an opportunity to meet the devotees. We get an opportunity to associate with Srila Prabhupada. Even though he's not present, we still have his association in the form of his instructions. And as Prabhupada says, he lives forever in his divine instructions and the follower lives with him. So in this way, we, by following Prabhupada's instructions, and here we're getting some directions on how to pursue or how to create Vedic society by understanding that the mental state of a person is important. That the time, there are certain times for doing certain things. They're considered favourable. etc. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these? Yeah, Arjun Chakra.
In verse 38, Kashyap Muni says, the translation itself, because of your mind being polluted because of defilement of a particular time.
Defilement, yeah.
Because of your negligence of my directions.
Mm.
Because of your being apathetic to the demigods, everything was inauspicious.
Mm. Well, that's pretty usual, isn't it? What's outstanding about that? Yep. This is the nature of relationships between men and women. Huh? You think that's funny, huh? Prabhupada, in the previous purports, we've seen how Prabhupada also faults Kashyapa and contrasts his behavior with that of Haridas Thakur. Right? So we, you know, we know that there's an aphorism or a saying, you know, it takes two to tango, right? So Kashyapa's putting the blame on his wife, but he was also part of the problem. And you know, yeah, I think that's about all that needs to be said. He's blaming his wife. Quite normal reaction. Anything else?
Not much. Have a question. We are doing too many terminal reactions. Actions like killing the children in wombs, and the killing cows, and which are very
dangerous. So many things.
Too many.
So many things.
Animals.
Yeah, so desensitized to the failings of Kali Yuga because we're just, you know, they're just around us all the time. So we think that's normal. We think our experience is normal. But Prabhupada's making a point here that, you know, only a few cases in history in previous yugas of some mishap right? Because people follow the culture. The culture was different.
Some countries have declined abortions. Some countries have declined abortions.
We're living in one. Now. They don't count them as deaths, but that's what they are.
And sending cows to slaughterhouses.
Yeah. Oh, I think we should finish here. Unless anybody got now the what Vinod? For us, chanting Hare Krishna. Yep. Becoming experts at chanting. So we put a lot of emphasis on chanting Hare Krishna. Don't we? Get up in the morning, 4 o'clock. And then we chant. So the first thing that we do in a day is to chant Hare Krishna so that we can elevate our consciousness to the point of human behavior. Which can be hard sometimes because now, you know, we go out and just have to face the people who don't do that. They look like human beings, but they behave like animals. Actually, they don't even look like human beings sometimes. I like to look at the people and their dogs, you know. Very often the person looks like the dog. And he's a servant of the dog too. You know, the dog does a poo and then they have to pick it up. It's crazy. Huh? Worse than animals. Lower than animals. Servants of the animals. Huh? Okay, Kondarajya Srimad Bhagavatam. Kijay, Prabhupada, Kijay. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Mahaprasadam Ki Jai. If you can't purify your consciousness by chanting Hare Krishna, then at least you can take prasadam. You know, that's when we experience real peace.